coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast, featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, and ESPN analyst Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn, and if you like what you hear, do us a favor. Please subscribe. Hit the little iTunes button where it says subscribe. Leave a rating on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this, and share it with a friend. Pass it along. Sharing is caring. Also, don't forget to check out Monday's In the Crease podcast with Aburn and Devitt, along with Friday's Weekend Preview podcast featuring Quick, Kesenick, and Terry Foy. There's a lot of good stuff out there, Dix. Tune in. There's even a couple of special pods out there that are good listens. Dixie, let's get it. All right, Dix. Another fantastic weekend of college lacrosse. And I just got to start by saying college lacrosse is great. It is. We are living in a great day and age for college lacrosse.
Yeah, we really are. I spoke with Ed Lee of from the Baltimore Sun on Monday, and we're just talking about separation and, you know, what makes an elite program anymore? You know, is it the history that you have? Is it your top 5, 10 recruiting classes? Is it, you know, the number of trophies you have in your case? Is it recent success? Is it success from 25, 30 years ago? And, you know, because the margin of separation between quote unquote elite programs and middle of the pack programs are becoming less and less defined. On any given day, one team can beat another. And, you know, we saw it again this weekend with some tremendous upsets, Delaware knocking off Rutgers. I know we're going to talk about that game, and, you know, Bucknell topping Loyola. Just all around, you know. Now you got Villanova's playing hot lacrosse after beating Maryland. They get a big win this weekend. Marquette is a little bit back from the dead, if you will, after losing to Richmond. They fell off the map a little bit. One goal win over Georgetown. So I don't know. It's just really, really fun to have such close competitive games and not having the separation between the traditional have and have nots be that great anymore.
On the calendar from the get-go, this looked shaping up to be one of the best weekends for college lacrosse throughout the season, and it did not disappoint. This was sort of the last non-conference weekend, so there were some great inter-league matchups, you know, Hopkins, Virginia, Notre Dame, and Ohio State, which we'll get into. But OT wins for Cardiac Cuse. That's what they're calling themselves now.
Yeah.
Cardiac Cuse, Hopkins, and Bucknell. Statement wins for Maryland and Notre Dame. So let's jump right into it. Our former number one team, the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, who you've seen a couple times in person, was taken down by the Delaware Blue Hens 13-9.
Yeah, and a lot of people, Matt Kinnear, most notably, I saw Matt last Friday. Matt was covering the Yale-Princeton game.
Matt's our editor-in-chief right here at Inside Lacrosse.
Oh, my bad. I thought everybody knew who Matt Kinnear was.
Most people do.
They
most
do. You're do. Right. And he was saying, you know, we're just talking about the weekend in general before the Yale-Princeton face-off that I did on ESPNU, and he was saying he was heading up to Delaware on Saturday, and he's like, I think this is a trap game. You know, Delaware's really good, and, you know, Rutgers being number one, you know, blah, blah, blah. And sure enough, it turned out to be a trap game. But you can break this one down fairly easy, and, you know, not easy, but quote-unquote easy. Delaware got off to a 6-1 lead, and their goaltender made 5 saves in the first quarter. And the goaltender for Rutgers, Max Edelman, made none. So right off the bat, there's your difference in score, 6-1. Matt DeLuca made 5 saves in the first quarter, 6 saves in the second. So 11 saves in the first half versus only 3 for Rutgers. And you're walking into a halftime score of 7-2 in favor of the Blue Hens. So I think Max Edelman is a terrific goalie. He's had a great season, but he just had he struggled on Saturday in Newark. Credit the Delaware Shooters. But Delaware got saves, and Rutgers did not. Huge difference in the game. Another key stat, Rutgers had 6 man-ups, 6, and only converted on 1. So 1 for 6 on the EMO. Guess how many penalties Delaware had? Or how many penalties Rutgers, or how many EMOs Delaware had?
I was going to say,
sorry,
6?
Trick question. 0. Zero. Oh, wow. 0. No fouls against Rutgers. So Rutgers played a clean game.
Yeah.
And you could see.
It's so rare that.
Yeah.
Usually an upset, there's some penalties, and you get some of those, not freebies, but easier goals in the extra man sets.
Exactly. And when you're struggling, when you're behind, you know, the extra man is a great way to get back into to a contest. And Rutgers was never able to get the EMO rolling. And Rutgers only had four turnovers in the entire game. But Delaware had a lot of possessions, even though the faceoffs were right around 50-50, 15 out of 26 in favor of Delaware. And you could see Delaware trying to, you know, they had five shot clocks in this game, so particularly in the second half. So just a really quality win for a Delaware team that the only ranked opponent prior to today that they had played was Navy when Navy was ranked weeks ago in the season, and they beat they fell to the Midshipmen. They do have a win over Villanova, which is now bigger with Villanova's recent success. But this is a huge win for the Blue Hens.
Yeah, they got key scoring from four guys in particular. Andrew Omanoli's having a great season. Yeah. Will Hirschman, Steve Dellergy, and listen to this name, Troopert Ortley, three goals and one assist.
He's a Troopert.
That's a great name. That's a great name.
Yeah.
Rutgers enters the Big Ten season this weekend on Friday night against Hopkins in a big game. Let's get to the Hopkins game and talk about that one a little bit. Homewood Field, beautiful spring day, classic Virginia Hopkins game. Hopkins, which has had some trouble scoring of late, puts up 18 goals and runs with UVA, wins it in overtime. Kyle Maher has sort of his coming out party, and Shaq Stanwyck, Shaq sighting, had the game winner in overtime for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, Shaq Fu was all over it with the game winner on a feed from John Crawley. But, you know, this is a game where Hopkins had to dig deep. They were down for most of the contest, and let's face it, they were staring their fourth consecutive loss in the face, and that would have been over in the month of March. Now, obviously, I understand, you know, March 31st, this Friday, Hopkins hosts Rutgers, but in essence, you're going over a month, and that can weigh on you heavily from a mental standpoint. So, huge win for Johns Hopkins. Kalmar, you mentioned six goals, really a breakout. Great shooting on his part. I think also they got good rope play. Kuhn was strong. I thought Spencer was strong. And they were able to compete at the faceoff a little bit better. I mean, unfortunately, Hunter Moreland went down with what looked like a leg injury.
Right at the end, right?
Yeah, yeah, end of the game. So hopefully he's doing better. But just a really big win in a you know, and credit Virginia. The last couple times Hopkins has played them in the NCAA tournament, they have smacked the Cavaliers around. Regular season is always this high scoring. I remember 2 years ago I did the overtime loss of Johns Hopkins to Virginia. That was when it was Ryan Tucker from Virginia dialing it in from downtown, and Greg Kaholin, and he was bombing seemingly from the colonnade. So this, I mean, a huge win, you know, and Hopkins, you know, look, they fought back. They took, what, a 17-14 advantage?
Yeah,
and then
three
Virginia
goals. And it looked like it was over.
Yeah, and Virginia had all the momentum, and they won the faceoff in overtime, or got the ball, I should say, in overtime, and turned it over. Hopkins calls a quick timeout, and, I mean, you know, the Crawley to Stanwyck. So I just think, I mean, that was a game that just had a tremendous ebb and flow to it, you know, if you're a Cavalier fan or if you're a Hopkins fan, you know, just talking to Caroline Darney in the office, you know, a huge Wahoo supporter, and was at the game on Saturday. And, you know, so emotion-filled game, but a must-win for Johns Hopkins. And if you're Virginia, you got the win over Loyola earlier in the year, but, you know, and you beat Cornell in that fashion, but you don't want to keep living like that. You know, you don't want to keep living, but
they now have one goal losses to Penn, Syracuse, Notre Dame, and Hopkins.
Yeah, and all games, I know Syracuse and Hopkins. I'm pretty sure Notre Dame. I'd have to go back and watch that, but games they gave up leads in the fourth quarter. So, you know, obviously Lars Tiffany and his group, very talented, very athletic. Got to be impressed with Ryan Conrad and the way he played. Zed Williams is having a player of the year type of season. Tanner Scales looks like he's returned to his former self before the knee injury, and now he's playing superior lacrosse. But they got to find a way to you know, close those games out.
Yeah, so they have five games left on the schedule. They play Richmond this weekend, the Cavaliers do. That is going to be...
That is not a gimme.
Richmond. No, not at all.
I mean, you know, and I say that because...
That's going to be a great game.
That used to be a breather. I mean, well, not Richmond, but, you know, certain schools like Richmond, newer programs of less tradition, like... You sprinkle some of those in there, you know. Virginia's played VMI points, and I don't know if they play them in 2017 or not. But you know, those are kind of get healthy games, get guys in the game games. You know, Richmond is really, really good.
Very contrasting styles. Richmond does not give up a lot of goals.
I got to give a shout out to Benny Pugh, the goaltender for Richmond. I believe they beat High Point 12-4 this weekend. He only gave up two goals, saved 10 or 11 for a save percentage. It was like 84%. That guy, Pugh, and I think Jack Concannon for Hofstra are your two head and shoulders goalies right now, probably vying for first team All-American honors.
Yeah. That would be a real cool thing for Richmond to have an All-American type first team.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's having a great season.
You're right. He's having that kind of a season. He's, you know, one of the best in his league for sure.
Yeah.
And playing like he's got 104 saves. He's given up 45 goals, a 70% save percentage. He's gonna have.
I'm no math major, but that is good.
That's what every goalie should strive for.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a big game for them. Then they play Cleveland State. Should be a win.
Sure.
Then they're North Carolina. Have Robert Morris. Should be a win. And they finish up with Duke. You know, Virginia's looking for their first. Still looking for their first ACC win in a long time.
Right. And, right. Yeah. What 1-18 over the last three seasons. Under Dom Starcia, I believe. Yeah, and then
and
now,
0-2 this season.
0-2, yeah. So
what's next for the Blue Jays as they get ready to play Rutgers?
You know, I think that you feel pretty good about yourself with the win. Obviously, Hunter Moreland's status is up in the air.
Is he their best faceoff guy?
I think so. Craig Medeiros was really good last year, and he's just struggled for whatever reason this season. Moreland, I think, out of all the faceoff men that Hopkins has the quickest hands. I think Medeiros is the better athlete. And the better lacrosse player, so to speak. Well, Moreland just has incredibly fast hands and does a great job. So, you know, there's a reason that they brought him back on a bad leg and sure, certainly cleared to play, but, you know, they may have benefited from having him rest a few more weeks or maybe not, you know, obviously with the leg locking up on him the way that it did on Saturday. So, Rutgers is, you know, Rutgers is coming in off a loss, and they beat Hopkins twice last year in the regular season and in the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament. So, you know, Hopkins is going to be hungry. And when they went up to Rutgers last year, you know, the Scarlet Knights ran them off the field. I mean, that was not close. So Hopkins is going to be hungry. Rutgers will be focused. It'll be a great game. Friday night. I know it's on the ESPN networks. I'm just not sure which. I know it was originally slated for Watch ESPN 3. But I don't know if it's going to be moved to one of the linear networks or not.
But most people get streaming, so they can check it out.
Oh, yeah, you still watch it. Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah. So moving on, Notre Dame beats Ohio State 12-7. Typically stout defense, and Sergio Perkovic with a hat trick for the Irish. They get a statement win against the Buckeyes.
Yeah, and Ohio State was, we talked about it, we joked about it last week, that Ohio State jumped from number 17 to number 4. In the Maverick Inside Lacrosse media poll, wins over Towson and Denver will do that for you. And other teams losing. This is a very, very good Ohio State team. This is a really, really good Notre Dame team as well. And I know it didn't give them a whole lot of love in the preseason and the early season, but they're making a believer out of me. Biggest takeaways, Perkovic, second week in a row, 3 goals. So the big boy shows up in big games, 3 against Virginia and now 3 against Ohio State. So hats off to the first team All-American, and he scored the first goal of the game. You know, so he kind of set the tone unassisted, 15 seconds, 16 seconds into the game, making it happen. So I think when you have your big boy perform like that, it's impressive. You know, Ryder Garnsey continues to perform at a high clip. And how about Notre Dame's efficiency on extra man? Three out of four, so 75%. For the Irish and Ohio State, Notre Dame committed no penalties, similar Delaware. No, Rutgers.
Rutgers
committed no penalties and lost. Notre Dame commits no penalties and wins. So clean game.
It's a good recipe, man. Don't foul.
Yeah, I mean, but that's, you know, at these high-level games, high-level Division I, you don't get as many fouls as you might get at, you know, Division III, junior college, because the players are, quote-unquote, more skilled. And that's not – I'm not trying to sound arrogant or
– it's a fact.
You know, but it's just – and they're also probably coached a little bit more conservatively in most cases. But it's still very unusual to see one team with zero penalties, let alone two, in the same weekend. So Ohio State, you know, they enter a huge game for them this weekend. They go to Happy Valley to play Penn State. We'll have that one for you on the Big Ten Network, 7 o'clock Eastern on Sunday night. Calling a game. So excited for that. Quick turnaround. And we mentioned sort of the gauntlet that Ohio State's schedule now has become. Towson, Denver, Notre Dame to end out your out-of-conference slate, and now you enter the terrain of the Big Ten. So it's going to be it'll be a great game Sunday. And, you know, Trey LeClair, the freshman, follows up a 6-goal effort against Denver with 4 goals. So he is for real, the freshman for the Buckeyes.
Leads the Buckeyes in scoring with 29 points.
Yeah.
Dix, another statement win, this time for the Maryland Terrapins, go down to UNC and just beat the Tar Heels 15-7, more or less dominated the whole game.
And again, much like Hopkins, had Maryland lost this game, they would have been 0 for March. And obviously the Terps had their game against Albany postponed due to weather. But when you put the time in that these guys put in and you're not getting the results that you feel like you should be getting, I mean, it's tough. You know, I've been there. I can remember back in, I think it was 1994, my senior year, we lost to Virginia. No, we lose to Virginia? Yeah, we lost to Virginia at Virginia. Then we lost to Carolina. You know, and then, like, I think back then the Army was the next game. And we're like, we got to win Army. You know, we can't lose 3 in a row. Just mentally, we were worn down. Carolina beat us pretty good. They beat us pretty good my entire time I was at Johns Hopkins. So I understand from the mental aspect. But what was interesting about this was on my drive home from Princeton on Friday, I talked to Anish Shroff, my colleague at ESPN, who was covering the game with Paul Carcaterra the next day in Chapel Hill. And he was like, man, he goes, Maryland's really loose. They're like joking around. They're having fun. And I was like, really? Like, I would have thought the exact opposite. I think they're all business and, you know, spitting fire and chewing on nails. But he said they were very relaxed, and it translated into a great win for Maryland that you mentioned. You know, they just wire to wire, you know, they ran that thing. And, you know, if you're Carolina, that's the second time you've been swamped at home. You lose to Hopkins 13-5, and now you lose by another 8 goals to the University of Maryland. And then you throw in the Hofstra and the Richmond losses. So all 4 losses for Carolina have come at home friendly confines of Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
So, you know, Chapel Hill's never been a place that you would characterize as difficult to play in. You know, they don't have crazy fans and they don't have a crazy environment. It's actually a great place to play.
It is a great place.
Beautiful weather, yeah, great really field.
Nice setting.
So anyway,
and everybody gets up to play the national champs.
Of course.
You know, you got to bring it every week.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. No question.
I think that's just what we're learning about as, yes, there are still a lot of the same teams are the big boys, but there's parity across Division I lacrosse that you have to bring it every single week. You can't afford a letdown or the other team will beat you.
Yeah. And you want to talk about goaltending as well. Brian Balcom and Jack Pizzula combined to only make 4 saves.
Yeah, Pizzula got a little bit of playing time.
He did, yeah. Freshman from Baltimore. So Balcom and Pizzula, you know, 4 combined saves, that's not going to cut it. You know, much like Rutgers, Max Edelman struggled between the pipes. And you look, Balcom's a guy who won, you know, made the save last year in overtime on Connor Kelly. That shot that allowed Carolina to go down the other end and set up the game winner of their own. So you got to feel good for Connor Kelly in this game, though. 3 assists, 2 goals, 3 assists, so 5 points. And you know that probably, you know, that shot that he took in overtime last year, I thought it was a good shot. It was just maybe, you know, not poor placement. It could have been better placed. And then you got Zach Powers flying out at you like Superman to distract. It probably felt pretty good for Connor Kelly to have those 5 points against Carolina on Saturday.
Dix, let's move to a game that you covered on Friday. You were on the broadcast for Yale at Princeton. Yale comes down to Tiger Woods Stadium, and gets a 16-13 win. What are your takeaways from that one?
You know, so coming into the game, talking with Andy Shea from Yale, and Matt Madelon for Princeton, Andy Shea was saying, we knew we weren't nearly as good as you guys thought we were going to be. We were not a top five, top 10 team entering the season. And you guys all had, you know, Inside Lacrosse had us at, you know, five, six, I can't remember. And then Matt Madelon said, you know, and he said, I must be an idiot because I always think my team's good. You know, I thought we were going to be okay, you know.
He was probably disappointed with where he was ranked.
Yeah, well, 33rd. You know, Princeton was number 33, and I asked if he used it as motivation. He said, you know, to a point, but, you know, it's not like – he was very frank and very honest. He said, it's not like Princeton Lacrosse been setting it on fire, you know, the last couple of years. So both coaches I thought were very realistic, and Princeton came out and scored right off the bat. Zach Currier with a cut down the middle from Gavin McBride made it 1-0, and Yale answered and kept answering all day long. Connor Mackey was great at the faceoff dot, 26 out of 32. Currier was facing off for Princeton. They also used a long pole, and they were just conceding the faceoff probably midway through the second quarter and just trying to beat up Mackey and get the ball away from him, and it worked in a couple of situations. But I think that this Yale team is growing up in a hurry. Jeff Cimbalista, an attackman, is out with a foot injury. Matt Gaudet, his replacement, scored 3 goals. Great presence inside. Penn Reeves is really good. I mean, I was first
8 points.
Yeah, yeah. And so in our pre-production, we're thinking about what players do we highlight in the open. And we only have a minute, you know, because we get to face off real fast. And I'm like, well, let's do Michael Sowers, thinking that you just kind of, you don't realize, you know, it's like a 30-second count. You know, you don't realize how much time you have. And my colleague Chris Cotter, who I called the game with, was like, "What about Ben Reeves?" And we do a, and I'm like, "That's okay." I was going to suggest that, but I didn't know we were going to have enough time. And you know, so it was Sowers and Reeves that we highlighted. You know, the freshman phenom against the senior Tuareton finalist, and Reeves looks healthy. And when he turned goal line extended with that left hand, Princeton had no answers. He scored all 4 of his goals coming around the cage left handed, and just did a great job. Michael Sowers, no goals and 2 assists. I love the way that Yale had a defender by the name of Aiden Haynes take him, another freshman, and he just matched feet. Like, he didn't – in the first half, Princeton wasn't sliding to Sowers, so they couldn't get burned by Sowers' incredible vision. He came into the game with 21 assists. In the second half, they did slide, and I thought Sowers at that point was trying to make some things happen and probably held the ball a little bit too long. So credit to Yale defense and the job they did on Michael Sowers. Austin Sims for Princeton did not play. He had an undisclosed injury. So they missed him. You know, they missed Sims in this game. But Princeton, man, they can play offense. Like, they are really fun to watch offensively, as is Yale. I think both on both sides, better defense needs to be played. I thought Blaisdell, the goaltender for Princeton, had a really nice game. What,
18 saves.
Yeah, 18 saves.
I mean,
he
let up 16 goals, but he had 18 saves, which means Yale was just barraging him with shots.
Yeah, and then Brody Wilson, the goaltender for Yale?
Brody Wilson.
Yeah, he didn't have as many saves. I don't know what he finished
6
with.
6 saves.
6 saves, but he made 2 in the first quarter that were really big, and there were really good shots by Princeton. One was a chicken wing, little left elbow, got out there and knocked it away. And that got the Princeton shooters thinking a little bit. But anyway, the bottom line is 26 out of 32 faceoffs. Yale controlled the tempo. Yale made Princeton play a ton of defense and came away with a well-earned victory.
And you like Sowers as the first time you've seen him play this
season? Oh, yeah.
Season?
Oh, very impressive. You know, he was kept in check. And when he's held in check, like, this is what you can do to Princeton. Obviously, they're missing Austin Sims. So on a day when Sowers was limited and Sims was unavailable, that was kind of a double whammy. But Sowers is the real deal. He's terrific. And if you look at Princeton, their personnel from last year hasn't changed drastically. 2 things have changed. 1, Sowers is running the offense and operating from X. And 2, they got a new defensive coordinator, Jesse Bernhardt, who came over from Rutgers. So those are the 2 big changes for Princeton, and they're having a really good season. I just think on this particular day, the defense looked a little confused against Yale, and they need to clean that up.
Dix, I want to touch on a few games real quickly that all were one-goal outcomes. Denver stays out east over, I guess, their spring break, plays Towson, gets a 12-11 win, was up kind of big, but Towson showed a lot of fight coming back, cutting a lead to 1 before Denver pulls out the 12-11 win.
Yeah, so we'll do a couple drive-bys here. Couple things. Bill Tierney can still coach. He's still the master. He started Connor Canizero at midfield. He was running him out of the box. So much to the point where it was the end of the first quarter, and I'm like, where's Cannizzaro? Is he hurt? Is he sick? And, you know, I didn't even recognize him in early because they were not dodging with him. And talking with Coach Tierney after the game, I asked him why he did that. He said, nobody thinks we can dodge anybody. So I decided to take a little pressure off of Connor, run him from a different angle, and let our guys get, you know, because when Cannizzaro's running the midfield, he was guarded by Sid Yule from Towson. It made Tyler Mays take him up top. So that opened up Colton Jackson on a shorty and Tyler Pace on a shorty, and Colton Jackson scored 2 one-on-one goals in the first half to kind of get his confidence. So that's Bill Tierney. You know, he takes chances. He'll move pieces around. I thought that was a really, really nice tactic. Denver got good goaltending from Alex Reddy, 10 saves, 6 of which were in the first half, and 3 or 4 of them were really good shot opportunities by Towson's offense that Reddy was able to keep at bay. Trevor Baptiste, though, at the faceoff dot proves why he is the alpha male in Division I lacrosse. I don't know what the final stats were, but it was his first meeting with Alex Woodall. Woodall actually beat him to the clamp a lot, and it became a little bit of a wrestling match. And instead of wrestling with Baptiste, you could see him directing his wings where to go. He would allow Woodall then to throw it out to space, and then Baptiste would just like kind of hip check him a little bit within 5 yards of the ball, so he's going for the ball, and then use his athleticism to get to it. So not only is Trevor Baptiste like really good tactically, mentally, he is an incredibly smart lacrosse player.
Another one goal game up in the Dome. The Dome gods get another one goal game. It's their 6th one goal outcome in a row, and they've won 5 of those, this time 12-11 over Duke. Freshman midfielder Jamie Trimboli scores the game winner in overtime.
They just keep getting it done. You're like, how are they doing this?
Because but they're also 5 goals away from being 1-6.
Yeah, but think about what? No, think they, about they are, what was that? 03-04 Hopkins was kind of the same way, like 6-7 one goal wins or something like that. So it doesn't matter. Like
2005, the national
was it
championship
05?
Team
okay.
Had a lot of, they went undefeated and had a lot of one goal games.
Okay.
As I remember it.
All right. Well, you're a better historian than I am. Look at you. The Bill Tanton of Inside the Cross.
That's right.
Dan Flynn.
That's right. Dix, here's something I find interesting. On our, if you look at their stats on, you know, on insidethecross.com, we have a great, all the team stats are there. You can connect to the scoreboard. Syracuse's top 3 scorers are all middies. Or listed as middies. Some of those guys may go down and play attack a little bit. Nick Mariano, Sergio Saucedo, and Brendan Bomberry, all listed as middies. And on Syracuse's roster, they're listed as middies as well. That's pretty unusual at this point of the season that you would see 3 middies leading a team in scoring.
Well, Mariano's playing attack for Syracuse, and you know, he's an attackman. Salcido's playing midfield for the most part, but they're interchangeable, and that's the biggest hole in the Syracuse team is the graduation of Donahue at attack. And you also got to remember that Nick Mellon, their best defenseman, is out for the year too. So, you know, huge credit to the Syracuse coaching staff and getting that defense up and running. You know, so what? Syracuse has 4 one-goal wins right now, correct?
5.
5 one-goal wins. But I think, how many overtime?
Albany, Virginia, St. John's, Hopkins, and Duke.
Yeah. But I know, like, there's something, I think they have 4 different goal scorers, though. The guys who have delivered the game winners are 4 different players. So Bomberry against Hopkins.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Trimboli against Duke. Mariano was Albany. Salcedo delivered the dagger against Virginia, correct?
Yeah, so.
So by committee. Pick your poison. So it's not like one guy. We're going to one guy. You got to worry about that. I mean, Trimboli. I mean, the guy nails the game winner in overtime, you know? And that shot was not an easy shot. He took the feed, I believe, from Jordan Evans, turned. He was about, 13 yards? And that was just a bullet pass.
Yeah, he played in our committed academy last year. He's good.
Uh-oh. Yeah. I know where this is going.
Yeah. Last game of the week to cover, Dix. And again, an outstanding slate of games. Wonderful to watch. Bucknell beats Loyola 9-8 in double overtime. Huge win for the Bison.
It's a Bison.
It's the Bison.
It's not the Bison. Bison
is. Give a shout out to North Dakota State.
Yeah, you can't.
Give a shout out there.
You're lucky that they're football fans or people who claim to be.
There's a lot of North Dakota State football fans that listen to this podcast.
I'm just saying, Anish got death threats. Oh my God, because he's pronouncing it correctly. Anish, like that was just like that was where he would winter is Fargo, North Dakota, because I think he's been out there 3 or 4 times over the last couple of years covering the. Yeah, so
the bison.
So he's like, he's like, show me his Twitter feed one, or told me to look at his Twitter feed one day, and they're like, you're an idiot. It's bison, blah blah. Like, all these people are getting after him, but it is bison. Oh, they funny. Do say it bison. So
yeah, they do. But Bucknell gets a big win. They're 2-3 in the Patriot League, but they needed this one, and it's a setback for Loyola for sure.
Well, I think it's more. So we talked about the hot goalie with DeLuca. I mean. And Delaware, but Loyola was able to overcome Morocco middle of the week, 1-goal win over Georgetown. So, that was a big win for Loyola, solving that goaltender. But, yeah, this is like you keep scratching your head with this Loyola team because they're so talented and they've got such good players. Now they're looking at a 1-goal loss to Hopkins, a 1-goal loss to Virginia. 1-goal loss to Virginia, 1-goal loss to Hopkins. Then they get smoked by Duke. It can happen. Teams have off days. 1-goal win against Georgetown, so you feel good right there. And then they turn around and can't close out Bucknell. Maybe the best player in lacrosse, Pat Spencer. This is a situation where Loyola could be on the outside looking in. They've got to win the Patriot League tournament at this point. They've got to win the AQ out of the Patriot to make it into the NCAAs. And it's not going to be an easy road. I mean, Army is probably the favorite, quote-unquote, at this point. BU has had a good season, only one loss for the Terriers, I believe. So, yeah, this is going to be a difficult road for Loyola to get that AQ. And I just think defensively they need to kind of tighten some things up. But they did on Saturday, and then the offense is the one that, kind of didn't come through.
Yeah, their best win so far is the Towson 11-7 win on March 1st.
Yeah. That is their best win, so we'll see what happens.
You mentioned Georgetown. I don't want to get sidetracked, but this is a tough luck program. They play a very good schedule.
Yeah.
They're 2-7 right now.
Yeah, I think Kevin Warren does a really nice job. I think he's a very, very good coach. I mean, remember, too, this is a program last year that suffered the death of a player. That was the end of the season last year, but he still has a lot of close friends on that team. And Ed Lee from the Baltimore Sun actually ran a piece on Eddie Blatz last week. And Tim Muller from Maryland was very good friends with him. And, he talked about the effect that his death has had on him and continues to have on him. So not trying to make excuses, but, that you're right. Tough luck for Georgetown. 1-goal loss to Loyola. How about that week last week? 1-goal loss to Loyola, and then a 1-goal loss to Marquette as well.
Yeah, they've lost 3 games, 11-10.
Yeah.
All right, Dix. You know what is having a great year, though?
Who?
Sideline Swap.
Oh!
Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more. Or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell gear simply and securely. List in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit SidelineSwap.com today to get started. That's Sideline, SWAP.com, SidelineSwap.com. And, of course, we'd like to thank Sideline Swap for being our first supporter of the D Fly and Dixie podcast, and
absolutely,
our Division One podcast here. And next week, I think I'm excited to announce a new sponsor next week, Dix. We'll get into that. But our podcasts are taking off.
Great,
and it's a result of people who listen, telling a friend, sharing it, and passing it on to other people, clicking iTunes. We're growing our network here, and it's great to see.
Absolutely,
it's a fun thing for us to do.
I saw a cool post on, I forget if it was Instagram or Twitter, but somebody was talking about getting a Sideline Swap deal, and they're holding up I think it was like an old STX Excalibur or something like that with traditional stringing and the two hockey laces shooting strings. That was pretty cool to see.
They got a lot of cool stuff there. So go to SidelineSwap.com and check it out. Dix, I also want to talk about our Freshman of the Week, our Epic Isle Committed Academy Freshman of the Week. Again, this is for alums of the Committed Academy. Last year, we had 325 guys play, 2016 and 2017. So this is the 2016 high school class guys who are now freshmen in college. We put it out for the American public to vote. Our three candidates this week
Jamie Trimboli, who we've talked about, mm-hmm. Syracuse freshman middie from Victor, New York, scored the game winner in his first start for Syracuse, first start of his career, in their 12-11 win over Duke. Luke McCaleb, Brown attackman.
He's having a good year.
He is. 2 goals and 1 assist. And Alec Van de Bovenkamp.
Oh, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, Furman goalie. 16 saves in their win. And our winner is Jamie Trimboli. He polled 619 people voted in the poll. Trimboli came in with 51%. So congrats to Jamie.
Well-deserved.
Yeah. He's got 3 goals and 2 assists on the season on a Syracuse team that's very deep at midfield. So for him to be getting some play and some run is great for him. And he is our Epic IL Committed Academy Freshman of the Week.
Game winner against Duke was his only goal of the game. So showed up at the biggest moment.
Hey, Dix, there's some exciting news in the Division I lacrosse world.
There is.
Yeah, St. Bonaventure.
The Bonnies.
The Bonnies have added men's lacrosse to their repertoire of sports.
They become
the 72nd Division I men's lacrosse program, unless someone beats them to the punch, as Terry said. I think their first games will be during the 2018-19 school year, so 2 years from now, and they're starting from scratch. St. Bonaventure is a Catholic school that's in Olean, New York. So it's in the southern tier, sort of between Rochester, Buffalo, Corning, sort of in that little triangle there.
And Corning.
They play basketball in the Atlantic 10, where most of their home is.
Yeah, sure.
And Terry Foy had a really good interview with their athletic director last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought we could dive into this topic a little bit. About what it takes for a school to want to add men's lacrosse to its program and what they're looking for. There's some great comments in this interview, as well as what a young program needs to do to launch a successful men's Division I lacrosse program. What are some of the things to look out for and key pieces?
Well, I'm sure the athletic director and Terry, you know, their conversation will probably have more salient points. But from outside looking in as a lacrosse analyst, you look at University of Utah, what they're doing, and actually they haven't even been declared D1 yet. So let me take a step back. Let me slip over to the women's game. And I know this is a men's program, but look at the University of Florida. I think they gained Division I status in 2007. But they didn't begin play until 2010. So they hired a coach, Mandy O'Leary, away from Yale. And she basically had 2 years to recruit, to promote, to get ready. I think you need that runway. I do think you need a runway to build an infrastructure, get players, facilities. And I think that's first and foremost. I do.
Yeah, Arizona State is doing that right now.
In women's, with Courtney. Yeah, sure.
And we've seen some men programs do the same thing to build up their program as well.
Yeah, and I mentioned Utah, but I know Utah has not been granted that official Division I status, but you have to like, you know, Coach Holman, Brian Holman and his staff putting that out there that, hey, we are going to go D1 and they are getting commits.
They want to.
Of course.
They're an MCLA club program, very strong. But they have made a commitment to their club program that is unprecedented, really, in terms of the resources and the coaching staff. Michigan is sort of the role model for a lot of that.
Right.
And the way they've built up from a very successful club program under John Paul and became a Division I school. And there's different ways to do it. What they're doing at St. Bonaventure, and again, I referenced, there's a D1 pod special. Should be popping up on your phone if you subscribe to the our podcast, which I hope you'll do. With Terry Foy interviews, Tim Kenny is the athletic director there, who's previously at UMass and at Stony Brook.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there when Stony Brook sort of went from Division III in most of their sports to Division I across the board. And he's experienced in that. And, you know, my college athletic side of it, my background, 15 years at a few different schools, and there's a lot of things that go into the decision. What we've seen in lacrosse mostly is schools that fit a certain criteria where, and St. Bonaventure is a very good example of it, Cleveland State, recently, High Point, is trying to increase your male enrollment. A small school that may or not have a football program that wants to increase your male enrollment, get a different type of student athlete on campus that may be in your current mix of kids. And, you know, lacrosse roster, a good lacrosse roster has 45 kids on it.
Right.
And generally speaking, Board of Lacrosse has had the type of high school player is a pretty good student athlete. You know, a lot of very good prep schools and high school programs are good academic schools. So you're recruiting a quality student athlete. And let's face it, traditionally it's a sort of a white-collar sport. So that demographic is a good socioeconomic boost to your enrollment. Can usually meet or afford that tuition cost at a private school. So it's a good fit that way. And Tim Kenny, the AD, checks off a lot of boxes, as he said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it fit that, the growing of the school and their enrollment. It fit it within their other sports. Their facilities matched up. They have a new turf field. They already have women's lacrosse there. They used to have a program and discontinued it in the early 90s. They don't really have a big club program. So they will be really starting from scratch.
From scratch, yeah.
So what are some of the keys? You know, hiring the coach is what Kenny goes into. He says he's talked to Bill Tierney, he's a good friend of his. He's talked to Greg Cannella from his years at UMass, who's a good friend of his. And, you know, Tierney made a point, hiring the right guy is the key. Someone who knows how to build a program, someone who can be patient, someone who knows the area, someone who understands the budgets and the coaching is almost secondary to just being a great coach. You need to be able to sell the program and get kids that want to play for you. I think that's a key thing. And then it's just having realistic expectations. One thing that is also important is finding a home. You know, there's where are you going to play at a level like that?
Facilities.
That the facilities part, but
within
a
the facilities,
a conference.
Oh, a conference. Yeah, sure.
Because the goal is to make the NCAA tournament. And really having a conference affiliation and a conference tournament to play in is your best bet. Cleveland State is still looking for a home, and the Bonnies will be looking for one as well. There's be three other A-10 schools that they're brethren with that are currently lacrosse schools. St. Joe's.
St. Joe's plays in the Northeast Conference.
UMass is
mostly in the CAA.
Yeah, an A-10 school. And Richmond. Yep.
And Richmond's in the SoCon.
So you need.
So they're all spread out.
Yeah, you need.
I could see St. Bonaventure going in the Northeast Conference just based on
geography.
That'd
be a good fit. Yeah. That'd be a good fit.
Geography and also overall competition, if you will, like for a first year program.
Yeah.
I think that would fit.
So those are some of the keys. I thought of a guy who might be a great coaching candidate for them. I have no idea if this person's interested or if the school's interested, but Paul Canopy.
From Stevenson.
Stevenson.
Okay.
He's got, he was a great player, Division I coaching experience, started Stevenson's program really from scratch, won a national championship.
They've upgraded their facilities. I mean, their facilities are great. Their stadium is awesome.
So you've probably reffed a few of his games. How many guys do they have on the sideline on that program?
They've got a lot. They've got a lot of guys.
They have 75 guys.
Yeah.
So if
a lot of players and a lot of coaches too.
If you want to get a guy who, if one of your intentions is to help boost enrollment of the school and sell your program, he's perfect for that.
Yeah, I broadcast his games, and I've ref some of his games, too.
He's from Rochester.
Yeah, he's a good coach. But that's the thing, though. It's, you know, Paul's established at Stevenson.
He wants to, I think he'd be up for the challenge.
Yeah, I'm not saying that he wouldn't, but, you know, it's all about situation. You know, he's got a family here in the Baltimore area. And
all of these things are major concerns.
Yeah.
But just to throw out a name of a guy who might be
ready
for that.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
Is Paul Canopy.
Yeah.
What are your any other thoughts on this?
I think you hit a lot, and I haven't had a chance to listen to the interview between Tim Kenny and Terry, but it sounds like there's a lot of great information. You know, I think we oftentimes point to all the negatives as to why Division I men's lacrosse isn't added more, and we know one of the big reasons is, you know, one, the ratio, scholarship ratio, I don't know what that is, but, you know, football has 85, all full scholarships, no thing is partials. Also, whenever you add a men's sport, gender equity still exists, Title IX, you do have to add a women's sport, so I think finance is a huge component to any discussion, consideration, implementation of Division I men's lacrosse, but No, I think it's great. We got another program, 72. I still think that we do need more of, you know, we need Pac-12 to step up.
Yeah,
you know, Oregon has women, Arizona State with women, USC with women. We need those schools to get a men's program. And obviously Utah is a tremendous step in the right direction if and when that comes to fruition. University of Florida, you know, it'd be great if they added their men's program.
It doesn't fit well in, but the ACC needs another team.
Yeah.
And have you ever been to Wake Forest? Do you know anybody
about,
who went to
Virginia
Wake Forest?
Tech? Virginia they Tech got a women's
is,
program.
Is a great example.
Virginia
of
Tech.
That, but it would just fit so well at Wake Forest.
Sure.
If you've ever been there or understand the campus and the it would be a good fit there. Virginia Tech, for sure, could be a candidate.
Michigan State used to have a program in Big Ten country.
Yeah.
New Hampshire used to play.
Butler
NC
used to
State
play.
Used to play.
Yeah.
Butler, yeah.
NC State, that's where Caroline's dad, Caroline Darney's dad, played at NC State.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was, you know, Tim Nelson started there, the great attackman for Syracuse, and transferred from NC State to Syracuse when they disbanded the program. And then Stan Cockerton, president of the, I don't know what the exact title is or what, but he's the president of the Canadian Lacrosse Federation. Yeah. They got some history.
Yeah. So it's a great step for the sport. It's great to see additional programs thinking about it and making moves to it. And the more the game grows, the better it is for all fans of lacrosse.
Absolutely. Well done, St. Bonaventures.
All right, Dix, I have a question for you.
Yep.
For the give and go this week.
Okay.
Who are your three greatest American rock
bands? We're sticking with music. Okay.
Sticking with music.
All right.
We did the hip-hop rap thing.
We're staying on the music motif.
We've covered this many times, what a diverse guy you are.
True.
A man of many passions and interests. Same here over here.
Mm-hmm.
What are your three greatest American rock bands?
So I go first this week. That's cool.
Like.
No,
yeah,
absolutely. I like it. All right. This is not tremendously difficult. Number one is Metallica. Love Metallica.
Are they all from the United States?
Listen, they're based out of the Bay Area, so they are an American band, all right? Lars has some, Dutch dissension, I think? Scandinavian, I don't know, but take it easy over there. They are an American band. You're really going to question the red, white, and blue of Metallica? Come on.
Okay.
What is wrong with you? This is a travesty. This is an abomination. You're really going to pull that out.
Who's next? The Beatles? Is that on your
list? Yeah, no, the Rolling Stones, dummy. Okay. All right? Come on. Metallica is an American rock band,
I'll give
period.
You that. All right.
I didn't take the Beach Boys, so you could put them in later.
Beach Boys are pretty good.
Or I do like the Beach Boys. Yeah. Or Striper, so you can pull out your Striper. I guess that'll be the hair band category. Number two.
Winger.
Stort. You did have a Winger t-shirt, didn't you?
Of course, you had to.
And a Kip Winger haircut.
Kip Winger mullet.
With little suede booties or something like
that. That was good.
I think the first time I was in where your college apartment, I swore I heard Hungry Like the Wolf pumping from your...
Duran Duran. Not American.
And you were like, hello, my name's Dan Flynn. Like, wait, this guy's British? So
Flynn. I'm Dan kidding. Flynn.
Yeah, right.
He was like Simon Bond. Simon Le Bond.
So
I saw him at the Hard Rock one time. He was checking in at the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas. I'm standing there in the lobby with my buddy. He's like, who is that guy? Who is that? It looks familiar. I'm like, I think that's the guy from Duran Duran. And he looked.
I think that's George Michael.
You know, like you see a guy sometimes who's a celebrity or star or something, and you just see him and you're like, he's just himself today.
Mm-hmm.
Simon Le Bond looked like the Duran Duran guy. This is even in like 2006.
Right.
You could tell the same haircut. He weighed about 16 pounds.
Rockstar thin.
Yeah.
All right. So Metallica would be number one. Guns N' Roses. Love Guns N' Roses.
Great choice.
And what? You're gonna question their papers? I mean,
no, they're good.
They're good?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
No, they're fantastic.
They
My wife good. And I got to see them last summer down at FedEx Field, I guess, in Landover, the home of the Washington Redskins. So I love Guns N' Roses. I've listened to those guys since Appetite for Destruction came out in high school. Actually, it was my brother that turned me on to Metallica. I really didn't start listening to Metallica until the End Justice for All album on vinyl. But Metallica, Guns N' Roses, and third, I really like, well, they're not around anymore, but Milli Vanilli was a really, no, I'm just kidding.
you love boy bands.
Is that,
I think they qualify.
Can I put Backstreet Boys at number three? No.
You could.
Third would probably be, I could say Pearl Jam and just completely ruin your list, but I'll go Foo Fighters. Love the Foo Fighters.
I'll tell you what's cool about the Foo Fighters is
everything.
Dave Grohl, I've seen them a couple times. Dave Grohl, drummer in one of America's greatest rock bands, Nirvana.
Yeah.
Kurt Cobain kills himself. He reinvents himself. He's the lead singer and guitar player in another fantastic band and chief songwriter.
And I don't know
what
how
a
much,
career this guy has.
How much writing did he do for Nirvana? I don't know if he did a lot of writing.
I think Cobain wrote most of their lyrics, if not all of them, and probably wrote most of the music. I mean, Dave Grohl was probably like 18 when he was in that
band. They all were, right? Or was Cobain a lot
Cobain
older?
Was a little bit older. Okay. And I think Novoselic, who's
the other guy,
bass player, was a little bit old. I think Dave Grohl was a really young guy when he was in that band. Matt Kinnear, our editor-in-chief, is the expert on this. I think that's one of his...
Well, he's a big Pearl Jam guy. Kinnear's a Pearl
Jam. He is a big Pearl Jam fan. Yeah. Most, a lot of Nirvana fans, are Pearl Jam, like, same thing. It came about the same time.
Yep.
All right, so
I mean, there's a lot of bands, too. I love American bands. I mean,
one thing we do really well here is music.
Yeah.
Cars, beer, lacrosse. You know, America's done some really good things. We fight world wars really well, too.
All right. Good for you.
I'm feeling red-blooded American
pulling out the jingoistic card, you know, this guy.
So let me just get this right. Metallica. Guns N' Roses.
Foo Fighters. And okay. I mean, you can give honorable mentions to, like, Aerosmith, Steve Miller Band is awesome.
Coming to Merriweather Post.
Yeah.
Frampton. I want to go see that. Frampton is awesome.
So when I was in college, I worked security one summer at Merriweather Post Pavilion.
Wow.
And two of the nastiest human beings I've ever met. So I got to meet MC Hammer. And this was when MC Hammer was on the way down.
This.
And it was raining outside. No one bought pavilion seats. If you're familiar with Merriweather Post Pavilion, it's an outside amphitheater with the seating covered and then the lawn.
It was on a big
hill. Is where you want to watch the show from, for my money, was getting rained on. And MC Hammer's like, hey, I want you all to just come inside. You know, I know you didn't pay for it. So he was really nice. I got to guard Reba McEntire's dressing room. She offered me a Snapple and gave me a Snapple. I accepted it. She must have had a waist like the width of this microphone stand. It was like inhuman how thin
she
was. Reba McEntire.
Okay.
Now, granted, this was back in 1992. Saw Elton John from afar.
I've seen Elton John there.
Yeah. It was a great show. Saw Dickie Betts and Greg Allman from a distance. I love the Allman. And that's another one of my favorite all-time American.
One of my
all-time Allman Brothers. Love the Allman
Brothers.
I've seen them probably about a dozen times.
I've seen them at Merriweather three times.
Yeah, I've seen them at Merriweather probably half a dozen times.
They're amazing.
Yeah, so didn't get to meet those guys. But I was there for soundcheck for John Mellencamp. And Steve Miller. And you want to talk about two nasty men.
Really?
Oh, man. And I think it's more that they're perfectionists, but they also, they're both brilliant, by the way. I mean, you know, very talented
musicians.
They
have some really great songs.
Yeah.
I really like Mellencamp, but I've heard he's a bit of a...
They're perfectionists. And if, you know,
Space Cowboys a perfectionist?
Steve Miller was a pain in the butt.
He got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last year.
Well, he didn't go because they were charging like $10,000 a ticket for his family or something.
I'm going. I'm supposed to go next week. It's in the Barclays Center.
You're going?
I'm going. Pearl Jam's getting in.
How much does your ticket cost?
I think it's $300.
So wow,
I don't know what they're charging. Maybe for a table down front or something.
Yeah,
it's more expensive. But it's
most artists though say that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a joke.
But it should be a good show. I think it's like a 7. I don't know much about it. I'm really excited. I'm going with Gator. Applegate.
Oh, nice. Look at you. All right.
Or planning
to. And where are they holding it?
It's at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn.
It's in Brooklyn. You said that.
So I'm excited to see it. Like, as a guy who puts on events, I'm really excited to see, like, how they work it. Because you see the HBO show where it's like a 3-hour thing. And everybody performs, and it should be great.
Oh, I've seen it on, they typically put on like HBO or Showtime.
But they do the speeches, and they have to change the stage over. It's got to be a long night, right?
Yeah, it probably is. I mean, especially if you're getting 6 or 7 acts are getting in.
Yeah,
you know? so anyway.
pretty pumped about that. But Steve Miller was like super difficult to work with, according to people who were involved in that.
Well, I can attest to. I mean, he had put on a great concert that night, but he was really tough on the on his crew and on the Merriweather folks. Really, really difficult. Really difficult. But hey, I guess that's why he's, you know, where he is, and we're doing a podcast.
He's not. I thought he was the gangsta of love.
He is.
Okay.
He's still a space cowboy, though, too.
You're all wrong on these. You were way off.
Oh, shut up.
There's only three right answers for this.
Okay, go ahead.
Bon Jovi, I've got to mention Bon Jovi for my wife. For my wife. But you had Metallica, Guns N' Roses, and Foo Fighters. All great bands. No, no doubt about it. But you're just flat out wrong. There's only three correct answers. Number three on my list, The Grateful Dead.
Oh, give me a break.
Their volume of work.
Shut up.
They were like the whole 60s, man.
Give me a break.
Jerry Garcia, Bill Weir.
You know, I said a couple weeks ago, Pulp Fiction sucks. The Grateful Dead suck.
Look, dude, they are an amazing rhythm and blues band.
Yeah, if you want to go listen to a guy play guitar for 30 straight minutes.
Have you seen Steve Miller in concert?
Yes, I have.
He'll just have like a, or the Allman Brothers, they'll have the Allman Brothers.
You know
again,
what? You're right.
Great
you
concert.
Are right. You
but
are
they'll
right.
play a song for 30 minutes with no lyrics.
Well,
no singing.
In memory of Elizabeth Reed, you know, Jessica can run that long, but I don't know. I just feel like the Dead is not about the music. The Dead is about the culture.
And they
and this is
band.
This is music.
Culture.
Music.
That is
music.
Unbelievable.
Grateful Dead.
Oh, they're amazing.
You break.
Number two. Bruce Springsteen and the E Street
Starship.
Band.
Starship.
Bruce Springsteen and E Street Band. Again, it's about how impactful they were, how many records they've sold, how many people they've affected.
I can't
beat the boss. You can't beat the boss.
Yeah, and I can, like, Born in the USA, I like the Born in the USA
album. Of course you would.
I've
said that.
Well, look, when I go to a concert, okay, I want to hear music. And
this is why you like Milli Vanilli and boy bands.
Well, I do.
Talk about being unpolitical.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't want some guy telling me that I am this and I am that and this. Shut up, Bruce. Shut up. Okay, shut up.
Oh,
as
man,
a musician, he's fantastic.
What a show this guy
He's talented.
On.
Yeah, I'm sure. I've never seen him live. So it's unfair for me to say, but I've seen video. I've seen it on YouTube. I've listened to it on the radio. I'm not going to pay money for somebody to go out there and tell me, you know, how terrible I am or how terrible the government is or how terrible.
I don't think you really haven't seen him in concert because that's not what his shows are about.
But I've seen it. I'm just telling you that.
It's like a religious experience, Dix.
Oh, for God's sakes.
He's amazing. The band's awesome. They play almost anything. They just take requests. Like, people just bring signs with songs names on them.
Okay.
Plays a different set every night, just about. And he's sort of the guy who, you know, U2's coming around this summer and they're playing the entire Joshua Tree album,
mm-hmm.
which would be a... That's
U2 is an amazing band.
And that album is fantastic.
And,
but
and Bono,
like
and Bono
show.
Spends like 5 minutes, or if Bono spends 5 minutes talking about the human factor, Bruce Springsteen spends 25 minutes from what I've observed. Just saying. I'm just saying.
All right. I think you're wrong about that.
Okay. Then
I've seen him and I know
might,
it's not that.
I might
it's
be
not,
wrong.
It's not
I
that.
Might be wrong. I'm just saying he gets on my nerves.
He's spectacular. The shows are a different show every night. There's nothing like it.
Okay.
But the number one band of all time, the greatest American
so this
rock
is
band.
Oh, this is American or all together.
Not greatest.
It's Pearl Jam.
American
I know it's Pearl Jam.
Of no doubt.
And I cannot, I will not dispute in any way, shape, or form. I didn't mean to steal your thunder, so if you want to go ahead and say your number one all-time American band, go right ahead.
I think everybody knows it. It's Pearl Jam. They're still going strong.
Yeah.
They're putting out great music. They, in terms of shows, they're friends with a lot of these guys that we've mentioned.
Yeah.
And they patterned a lot of their style and show after Springsteen. And it's never the same show. You get a different show every single time. From their ballads to their rock anthems to their obscure songs. I mean, one of my favorite Pearl Jam albums is Lost Dogs. It's two albums, basically, or like two CDs. That they put out in the early 2000s, which was just their B-sides.
Mm-hmm.
And some of their best music was from there. You know, didn't make the cut to put on one of their albums, and it's just fantastic. There's nobody like them, and their shows are the best. Pretty political, though. I could see why you wouldn't like seeing them.
I saw them. My wife and I saw them.
But they try
them.
To keep it to a minimum on stage.
Well, and I also think that in their old age, quote unquote, they've gotten more, at least, okay, I've only been to one Pearl Jam show.
Where'd you see them?
The Chicken Box, Royal Farms Arena, a couple years ago when they were in Baltimore. It was like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, did I see you there? Didn't I bump into you and Eric at a concert one time? Oh, Van Halen.
Oh, yeah. Which oh, on my, whoa, wait a minute. They're on my I forgot about
they're,
Van
they're like
Halen.
Right there with Bon Jovi.
Oh, I totally forgot about Van Halen. Oh, wait a minute. I might have to
How
redo my list. I know. I
they
got
to bump the Foo Fighters.
You know what?
The
they
Foo
do.
Fighters are great, but
they
Van
do.
Halen.
They do.
Unreal.
And both Van Halen and Van Hagar are, I mean, those guys are phenomenal. Not Gary Cherone. You know, we can't have Gary Cherone.
We don't acknowledge
him. Yeah, yeah. Van Halen is
More than words.
Oh, you want to talk about political? What was that song that they had? Dan, 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 or else we'll rest in peace. Drop the bomb. You're like, come on, get off my. You know, I thought you were going to say something like Faith No More or.
No, Van Halen saw it. They're like one of my
incredible.
Favorite.
That's right. I did
so
see you. I did see. We did see you at the Van Halen.
Yeah, but
concert.
I guess I missed you at the Pearl Jam.
We were there at Pearl Jam. Yeah, we were there. Pearl Jam. That was great. That was great.
They're
I feel like he's mellowed.
So
I really feel like he's mellowed though. Through yeah, Eddie
yeah,
Vedder.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, old age will do that to you.
So, but Bruce Springsteen has become more. I feel acrimonious through the year and more than he was in his younger days. I mean, a lot of people don't even realize Born in USA is not a patriotic song.
No,
I mean,
it
that
is
an anti-American song.
Very much so.
You know, and that's, you know, it's, I mean, when I was, shoot.
But you know what? This is, to quote my man Eddie Vedder, the song Alive.
Yeah.
It's become like an anthem for people who, you know, I'm still alive is like a positive message.
Right.
He did not intend it that way.
Right.
At all when he wrote it back in 1989 or something.
Well, but, I mean, I remember when 10 came out, we were both in college, and that took the
but Eddie
homeward
said,
campus by storm.
The people have changed the meaning of that song over time, and that can happen to a song. The life of a song is that it's become this positive anthem of celebrating life, basically. And I think that's what's happened with Born in the USA. A little bit.
Right.
That song is that it's
well,
changed the meaning. Like,
was
people
it,
take it as a, but that's not, you're right, the way Bruce intended it.
Wasn't there
a
presidential
song.
Candidate over the last 20 years that used it as their his theme song, Born in the USA?
I'm sure. That
I want to say it was Gore, but I could be wrong. Because Clinton's was Don't Stop.
It was
by
yeah,
Fleetwood, Mac.
Fleetwood Mac song.
It may have been Gore that used, but I don't want to, somebody used it as a.
Chris Christie probably tried to use it.
It's Ross Perot. Ross Perot. So, but Bruce Springsteen is a tremendous pain in the butt.
You think so? Okay. All right, we're changing our music on this show. I think it's going to be a Bruce song.
That communist Bruce Springsteen. I did hear Bruce Springsteen is part of the Communist Party. Is that true?
Not even. He's one of our greatest American heroes of all time.
He is a legend. And Jerry Garcia is a legend too. And I think, you know, I don't like the Grateful Dead's music. I don't. But Jerry Garcia's legacy is pretty sweet. And all accounts you hear about him, he was very charitable, very easygoing, very friendly. You know, just kind of a good dude. Another quick Meriwether story.
Oh, I love these.
Bob Weir was playing, and he had some band that he was with.
I think I said Bill Weir. It was Bob Weir.
Bob Weir, yeah. Bob Weir had his band, and this was during the summer. I worked, summer of 92, working at Meriwether. And it was Bob Weir, and he had some, like, all-star band or something. Yeah, something. There must have been, I don't know, and this is not exact. There were, like, 300 people on the property of Meriwether that, like, paid. There was 1,000 around the fences. We spent all night just chasing people, grabbing people. And it was a very non-physical, non-violent philosophy, but about an hour and a half in, the guy, I think we called him like a squad leader or something like that, you know, or a team leader or something like that. He was just like, you know the part about we're not supposed to do this, but forget all about it. Do whatever you got to do to get them out of here. Because, like, you grab somebody.
Like Monty Burns chasing hippies off your front lawn.
Look, dude, this was 1992, I was a lot younger with a little bit more hair. But, you know, you'd grab somebody from jumping over the fence. And that was the other thing, too. Like, these people were so torn up that, you know, they try to get over a chain link fence and they'd get caught. Like they'd rip their leg, they'd rip their hand.
Imagine some of the things you saw.
You're just like,
working security at a summer concert pavilion.
If that means enough that much to you, you can go right ahead. But there's people you'd like, you know, you'd run and chase, you'd grab them because they're not athletic by any stretch of the imagination. They smelled really, really bad. And you'd get them like, hey, man, I'm cool, all right,
they
man.
They camped out at Merriweather.
Hey, man, it's all right, it's cool, let me go, man. Hey, you don't be so wrong. I'm like, all right, that's fine. And then you let them go, and they're like, hey, man, screw you, man. Like, they run the other way.
Fight the power.
You're like, God, I just spent like 10 minutes tracking this guy down.
People probably just followed him around. Probably some deadhead just following him around for the summer.
Well, and that was the other.
What'd you do this summer? I worked at Merriweather. I worked security. What'd you do? I just followed him around.
Well, that was the other part. So across the street from Merriweather is Columbia Mall. And all the deadheads were taking showers and baths in the fountains. People were freaking out. Like, they were totally freaking out, you know? I mean, luckily, that was a Howard County police, you know, issue over there. But people were, like, bathing. And they're bathing their children in the fountain. And I'm like, I think I got parked, you know? I'm on the property of Merriweather. I think I looked across the street. And I was like, yeah, that's why I go to college. Like, that's why I'm in college right now. So I don't end up like this guy.
This is great.
So I don't end up like someone in the fountain at Columbia Mall watching a Bob Weir show. So,
and that's our give and go for this
week. There
you go. All right, Dix, what to watch this week? What games are you doing? You said you're doing a game this week?
Yeah, so I've got a women's game on Wednesday, Big Ten Network, 2 p.m., Florida versus Maryland.
That's going to be a great one.
That'll be a real good one. Number one versus number three, Terps versus Gators. Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern, I'm doing the play-by-play for Ohio State, Penn State women. Then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern, Big Ten Network. All these games are on Big Ten Network, by the way. Ohio State at Penn State, 7
That's
o'clock.
A good one.
And I'm the analyst for that game.
That's
so
a good
busy
one
week
too.
For me.
Yeah, so here's all my little games I'm interested in. Rutgers at Hopkins, of course. Mm-hmm. It should be a
Again, that game is, I believe it's
7 o'clock
check
on
your, yeah,
Friday?
6 or 7 o'clock on Friday. Again, check your local listings. It could be on a linear network like an ESPNU, but I think right now it's scheduled for Watch ESPN, ESPN3.
Which is all right at my house, man. I
sure.
just throw on my Apple
go
TV
over, yep.
and check stream it.
Yep.
And it looks amazing on my house. Syracuse at Notre Dame.
That game's on the U as well.
Brown at Princeton.
That'll be an interesting game. I mean, Brown won last weekend, and Dylan Malloy is still being Dylan Malloy. I mean, that game could honestly be what I saw from Princeton's defense last week, and then what I've seen on tape from Brown's defense. That game could be 25-24.
Yeah. Yale at Penn.
Yeah, Penn got smacked around by Princeton. Yale's 2-0 in the Ivy, so a big game for Penn to get a W.
And the last one I'm very interested in is Virginia at Richmond.
That'll be a great game.
I got a buddy who's like a big baseball fan. He's got three little kids who lives in Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
My friends from high school. I'm going to send him over there. He went to Richmond and
yeah.
a big Spider supporter. I'm going to send him over there with his kids. Probably a nice day. Go over there and see a good game.
Benny Pugh in the goal. Brendan Hines on defense. You know, and I know we talked about a lot of Virginia's offensive stars. We didn't mention Michael Krause and Doc Zakin, the two really talented freshmen. But that'll be a terrific lacrosse game.
And here's a cool new feature on InsideLacrosse.com. When you go to the game page, there's fan picks. You just log in with your user ID for Inside Lacrosse. You can pick the fan picks. And also has the computer predictions, which is based on some algorithms that are stats guys have put together that helps mm-hmm. predict the games. Really cool new feature on InsideLacrosse.com. I think you should go check it out. Dix, we missed something.
Mm.
Dixon's top five teams.
Oh, top five.
So let me give you the Maverick Media Poll top
okay.
five. Shake up, obviously, Rutgers dropped from first to ninth or tenth or something like that. Ohio State comes in at number five, Syracuse at number four, Hofstra still undefeated at number three, Penn State still undefeated, number two, Notre Dame is our number one team. What do you got?
Yeah, so I've
How'd
got
you vote?
Five Denver, four Hofstra, three Syracuse, two Notre Dame, one Penn State. So my number one stayed the same. Notre Dame stayed, I think, at two. Syracuse bumped up from like six. Hofstra went from five to four in Denver. I think I had him like eight or nine last week. They moved back on the top five. So yeah. That's mine.
I like that you have it this time.
I do.
The last few weeks.
I have. Yeah, I've had to.
A recurring segment on our show. You have it. You're like, oh, who did I pick?
I'm like, yeah.
I wrote it down. It's like, on his cue card.
I'm prepared. I have to be prepared.
I love it.
We got new sponsors rolling in. Got to be prepared.
You got to do a good job. All right. Again, if you like what you hear, share it with a friend, tell them about it, and pass it along. and also subscribe and leave a rating. Click on a little thing. Tell us if you like it. Give us 5 stars, and that helps us every little bit. Dix, I enjoyed this.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll talk to you next week, everybody. Enjoy the games.
Highways jam with